This is Turner Mining Live, where we give you a behind-the-scenes look at how we're innovating to change the game and grow a business in an ancient but still booming industry.
Well, what's up, guys? We are back.
We're back.
It's hard to believe how long it's been, but we're back. I don't remember how to quite do this. It feels a little bit odd sitting here hearing myself.
But we do always have that.
Okay, what is that?
Well, this one, we could actually get sponsored by them.
Jared needs to be paying.
Yeah. It's Bloomington Brewing Co. Their rooftop IPA.
So, two quick stories before we talk about who's with us. Well, actually, let's do that because I'll get myself in trouble. To the right is the guy that has kept me out of trouble for a lot of years, Thomas Hahn. And to my left is the guy that's been keeping me out of trouble lately or getting me into trouble. I think we find ways to get into trouble. And he's been on before, but it's the guy that I look through a glass panel at every single day.
Yep.
Our offices touch, for better or for worse. And that's Mr. Patton Deicher.
Welcome, Patton.
How's it going?
Welcome, Patton. Welcome to the pod. But going back to your beer real quick, Thomas, because tell the name again.
Bloomington Brewing Company.
So right here in Bloomington.
Yeah.
It's owned by a living legend.
Yes.
A young guy, kind of our age. Mr. Jared Franklin. I don't know if he wants to be shouted out on the pod, but
well,
he's going
we'll
to.
Shout him out. That's fine.
He owns a core. Well, let me back up. He's got a law degree. Yep. He was practicing attorney for a while.
He's like smart.
Smart guy. He decided to purchase a quarry right here just down the road. Sells crushers.
Yep.
Also. Was the number one crusher salesman for whatever brand he sells. I think it's Lippman. I might get myself in trouble for that.
We'll go with it.
He's legit, dude. And then he decides to buy a brewery, and now he's making some of the best beer. But that specific beer, Rooftop, look up Rooftop Quarry.
Yeah, I was going to say, and that's what the picture is, right?
It's a picture of the quarry. I wish you could see the can. Yeah. Famous quarry here in Bloomington where kids used to swim. In the summertime.
Is there a kid?
There is a kid specifically that got in trouble for swimming there. You know, and to me, I'm not going to get off on a rant here, but this is content that our audience needs to be aware of. A, you should never go swim in quarries.
True.
You shouldn't do it.
True.
But if you were to do it and someone were to call authorities, you definitely should not run from those authorities.
Definitely not.
And I'm going to get myself in trouble. When you're with a bunch of other kids who don't know how to get out of the quarry, you should not leave them when you're running from the authorities.
It's called evidence.
To be young and dumb.
This is the same quarry from Breaking Away, correct?
From Breaking Away.
Yeah. So there's also cultural reference of why Jared named it Rooftop. So.
Yeah. It's a really cool spot. They've actually filled it in. So many kids were jumping. It's a 90-foot ledge from where you jump to the water. And so many kids, I say so many, there were half a dozen kids over the last 20 or 30 years that have jumped, you know, hit the water awkwardly, become unconscious, and you're in about 100 foot of water, and, you know, the kids would die. No chance. They drowned. Yeah. And the month before I got in trouble there, this is back in high school, long time ago.
Yeah.
I was a
good kid. What's the legal thing? We're like past the time. Right
or what? Oh yeah, we're way past the time. Yeah. I didn't. Yeah,
statute of limitations.
Yeah, that's it. And but a month before this, a kid jumped and didn't resurface. And anyway, so they were patrolling the area heavy. We'd been swimming in this quarry for 2 years.
Still
whatever, so.
Very active. I mean, you go down on any summer weekend, completely full. I mean, they've not.
Yeah, there's surrounding quarries where you can jump, and there's 30, 40 footers, and a lot of people do it. But that specific 90. I think it's 90 or 95 feet. They bulldozed it in. So, yeah. Anyway, getting off on the beer tangent, we love Bloomington Brewery,
love Jared
Brewing, and love Jared.
And I mean, he could keep bringing us beer. That'd be great.
Yeah, he brings us beer. But I'm pumped to be back. We were talking a little bit right before we hit record. I think we only did four of these last year, which is an absolute
sad.
it's an abomination.
Are we going to make a public commitment?
Do you want to make a public? You're looking at me.
I would love to make a public commitment.
I know you're not the problem.
That we're going to do better.
Are we going to do better?
Yeah, we're going to do better.
I'm going to do. I'm committing right here on the podcast to do better.
Well,
I promise.
I mean, that we is you and me and our guests. So yes, we are going to do better.
Yeah, and Sarah's the kind of the brains behind a lot of this. She does all of our marketing, and she has been frustrated with
us,
with us,
us,
with us. Probably more, mostly me, but but us.
No, us.
For not getting more of these out.
Hey,
so
it's both of us.
If you're new, and I got a ton of fun stuff to talk about, it's going to be a good one. But if you're new, why we started doing this podcast originally was so that our employees out in the field could hear some of what's going on.
Yep.
We want them to hear our voices, our thoughts. But then also, anytime we have a guest on, we try to do mostly Turner Mining employees as guests. Every once in a while, we'll have someone from outside the organization. But really, it's just a time to catch up with someone in the organization that other employees of ours might not know, might not work with.
Yeah.
Patton is, I wouldn't even call you a guest because you've been here, what, like?
Almost 6 years working on it.
Almost six years. Months. And we're almost 7 years as a business. We'll celebrate 7 years in March. So Patton's been here a long time, even before you.
He beat me by like 6 months.
Yeah. So I want to get into just 2 minutes of who you are. We've already had a podcast on you, so I don't want to bore everybody with who you are, but you have a title, Chief of Staff. We sat in Montana in a meeting with a client here, probably a month ago, a room full of 15 people, and we get around, we're doing introductions, and Patton gets to him and he said, Chief of Staff. And the main gal running the meeting turns to you. I think you were sitting by her. Yep. She turns to you and she goes, Chief of Staff. Wow, that sounds fancy. What in the world does that mean? So most companies, and especially mining companies, don't have a chief of staff. What do you do? You started like hiring people. You've done everything here over the last 6 years, going from startup fires every day to what we're doing now. So what do you do now? What is a chief of staff?
Yeah, so I work with our operational leadership team, a lot of our folks that lead our major departments in the organization, and just try to keep track with all of them, what we need to be prioritizing, what we're initiating, and try to just serve as a catalyst or partner for them in that. A lot of the time, it's just being on a phone call and saying, hey, by the way, this is coming up. Have we talked about this closeout or this startup, or where are we at with reconciliation, and trying to kind of be this catch-all to not necessarily be the one driving all of it specifically, but being a strong thought partner and, like I said, catalyst with a lot of these folks to make sure that we don't leave any task behind.
Yeah, and you, I would say, push a lot of people's buttons intentionally.
It can happen from time to time.
Yeah. I think one of your strong attributes to the team, and it's where I fall short, is on follow through. You can take the StrengthsFinder quiz, and, and one of my biggest downfalls is follow through. I can have a good idea, and then I lose it after 5 minutes, and I'm on to the next thing. You really keep the team at large focused on plans and execution of budgets and, the little details that are really easy to overlook.
And chief of staff roles, having someone with strengths there, that's critical, right? Because, where chief of staff roles come from oftentimes is like if you look at political offices where you might have somebody sitting in the seat and then you have people that need to kind of like make sure everything is happening kind of from a follow-through perspective. And that's kind of, I do think it is, to Keaton's point, it's not necessarily something that's used all the time in business, but when you have a founder that might be like Keaton Turner, it's not a bad thing to have a chief of staff.
No, it's not. It's not. And I, right before this, I was actually real close, especially like an hour ago, to saying, maybe we do this a different day.
Yeah.
Because he and I were in here. You probably didn't even hear this, Thomas, but like, you and I go at it.
Yeah, fairly often.
And
which is good.
You know, healthy. I tell this story every once in a while, but we were in a meeting and it was in the conference room and you and I were not agreeing on something. I don't even remember what it was. And I think I made the comment, I think I said, son, if you'll just listen for a second.
Yeah, that one's come out.
But, you know, an hour ago we were going at it because, again, you were wound up about a plan and executing a plan and creating a plan for something that we hadn't. And I, you know, was of the opinion, well, that, you know, that can wait till next week. We've got other priorities. But I think giving you the freedom and the space, especially in the last year or so, you know, for us to kind of go at it and ultimately get the best result out of it.
Yeah.
It's a lot different than where we were in the early days where it was just, you know, people walked around and whatever Keaton Turner said,
we were doing. And I think we've done a good job collectively about bringing Patton into the right meetings, forums, et cetera. Like I even think about like when our exec team meets, Patton's now a part of that, which I think helps him, gives him maybe a little fairer fight when it comes to like actually going toe to toe with you. Because if he wasn't kind of in those, you know, discussions, he might not have the information that you would. And so I do think my caution would be to anyone who's thinking of doing this, you kind of got to be open kimono if you're really going to do this right. If you don't, you may just end up with another person who's just kind of
in the mix. And you've got more context. I think for the first time ever, and I'm feeling this now more than ever, I think you have, Patton, have more context in the business and in our daily operations and in our, you know, the staff at large than I even do.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, trying to maintain that and in a way that's helpful to the team is a challenge, no doubt. But Thomas, to what you're kind of going down the path of, the hardest part of my job, and it's the part that nobody ever really sees, is actually those run-ins with Keaton. And it's great whenever as a team we all say, hey, we're going to go take it to the next level. We're going to start being excellent in creating plans and budgets, and this is how we're going to run projects, and it's going to be amazing. Well, by the time we leave that meeting, you know, we've got the headline and it sounds fun and it's good. But the committed action that's behind that is actually what is tough. And,
yes,
you know, you go sit in a meeting with everyone and to get them excited and motivated to go and put all this effort in is hard. But then to also go and get Keaton on board with it and committed to his part of it and driving that action too sometimes can be just as hard, if not harder, because it's change is hard.
I just love that Keaton says, "Listen here, son," like he's an old man. I love it.
Well, and you know, part of it is because I think you have a very strong opinion. You think you're right. I think I'm right. I have a very strong opinion. You don't like to be proven wrong. And I don't like to be proven wrong. So it's like you got this big, dumb, ignorant rock and this, you know, somewhat sharp young guy that, you know, wants to beat you with facts and data. And you know this now, like, you know, some of our biggest fights are when you don't come with the facts and data.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And it's like, well, you know, we're not even going to have the conversation because you don't, you're not prepared,
right,
you know, to use data. And we don't, it doesn't do either of us any good to argue if we're not looking at the data.
It's true. And, you know, a lot of those, the lessons I've learned in the past kind of year when we've had those conversations have leveled me up to a whole different degree to go back to the team. Because whenever then we get into a disagreement, you can go always quickly point right back to that. And if you're prepared, you can quickly in disputes, you can quickly in discussions or questions, if you are set up straight from the start.
Well, I've said this multiple times, especially as we've grown the business and the staff. I wish more people would come in and say F you to me, you know.
Okay, I've never done that.
Well, in your own very unique way. Sometimes just the look on your face says it. And I'm like, you just need to turn right back around and go back into your other glass cube. But in all seriousness, like, we've got a lot of really smart people. Some of them don't don't want to say that or challenge thinking when it comes from the guy with the name on things.
That's true.
And so, yeah. You know, I welcome it. As much as I leave here some days frustrated at you and want to choke you out, we always end up at the right spot.
Yeah, we do.
And I think if more people had the freedom, and I think a lot of people do have the freedom, but some of it's just a respect thing. Some of it is, you know, people don't love confrontation for the most part.
Correct.
But we've seen a few people, you know, speak up the last few months and have some more honest, hard conversations. And I've done two of our annual reviews with our, you know, my direct reports. I've got 8 of them, and they've been good. You know, yeah. Constructive criticism and feedback is a gift, and we're going to do the rest of them and see how it goes.
But. Well, and this is also where a chief of staff can be very valuable, right? So if you have, you know, not everybody wants to necessarily be confrontational. That's okay. Having a chief of staff that they can leverage and maybe even have that person bring forth certain things like that, that is a resource to the team, which is, I think, again, often misunderstood. A lot of people think like the chief of staff just really serves the CEO. Really, the chief of staff is actually serving the organization and really can be someone kind of a propellant for the organization with the CEO.
Yeah. I think you've been doing a better job, especially lately, of translating for me what's happening across the organization. Yep. And then I think you also do a good job translating for the organization what's yes. going on in my brain.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And in the condensed half an hour argument we had earlier is kind of the culmination of 2 weeks of arguments and discussions I've been having with the staff that, you know, if we both leave here, if we're on the same page, we're both now more effective. I'm coming out with a different lens, some new ideas to take back to the team. You're going to step into the next meeting with all the context and everything we've been going through.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a packed up version.
Yeah. No, I love it. You've kind of seen and done a lot here. And we'll talk about some of the stories and context and all that. But some new people might listen to this. What the heck have you, Thomas, been doing the last 6 to 12 months?
Oh, we've had a ton of fun at Turner Staffing. For those who don't know,
I loved, by the way, the Christmas party. Your group, that's a different group.
Yeah, they are savages, rightly so. So, for those who don't know, Turner Mining has kind of created a sister company, and day to day, that's my focus. And day to day, Keaton's focus is Turner Mining. We created the company less than 2 years ago now, which is kind of amazing. And we've grown tremendously. We yeah. have like 140 employees.
That's awesome.
Just crazy to think about. And then we also help people on the recruiting side too. So our reach is beyond those 140.
But have we put a human in all 50 states at this point?
We've hired him out of all 50. I don't know that we've put him in all 50. I know, for example, we have not put someone into Hawaii yet. We had a partner there for a little bit, didn't end up putting anybody there. But okay. But yeah, I mean, it's most the map, depending upon which color of the map, we have a Turner orange map and a Turner teal map, but basically every state's covered.
We should have a huge party. So if you're listening and you're from Hawaii and you want to...
you need some recruiting help or staffing, give us a shout. Yeah, awesome. We'll take that one off.
Yeah. No, it's been really awesome. Cool to see.
The team has grown tremendously, also from a staff perspective, and Patton's been helping a lot with that, which has been really nice. But yeah, just a crazy wild ride. We're in the life cycles. We're in the go-go stage. So
that's one of the things I want to talk about, life cycles, because it's a really cool thing. And Patton brought up something this morning that I want to share. But the thing I'm most proud of in 2023, because I want to look back at 2023 for just a second. I was on a call this morning with Ben Burgess. Shout out Ben, down in Florida, Burgess Civil, and we're kind of doing this joint speaking thing here in a couple weeks in LA. And he said, "How do I kind of get the crowd like a little bit teased to come hear us talk?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I'll have to give it a little thought, but you know, to me, one of the coolest things that happened in 23, and you'll know the actual numbers, we had over 11,000 people apply to work for our company. Yep.
One person every 45 minutes for the whole year.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Now, how do you do that math at 45? Is that business working hours? No, is that day that is, hours in a day?
That is hours in a year. And if you do the math, it's
11,000 you know, divided by however many hours are in the year.
Correct.
One person every 45 minutes.
It's insane.
And when I told him that, he was like, that's, you know, that's the industry's biggest problem. And so for me, when I look back at 23, we added, I think one of our probably most significant new customers in 2023, yep. We, you know, financially, it's been our best year. But when I look at that stat, it's when amazing. The rest of the industry, it's the number one problem. Like to me, that solidifies so much of what we're doing, why we're doing it. Like that's the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah. And I like it because it's not, and I love operators, don't get me wrong, but it's not 11,000 operators, right? It's.
And my first question to you was, okay, half those people, they're from Papua New Guinea or wherever.
They're not. They are US citizens. But now, are they all qualified? Can they, but those are unique applications. So it's.
So it's 11,000 US citizens have applied.
Yeah. That's kind of crazy.
11,000 US citizens interested in a job in the mining industry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mining or, and on the staffing side, we help a lot of heavy civil too. So yeah. Mining
in, or in the dirt in yeah. some way, shape or form.
Yeah. It's crazy. So
that is cool. Yeah.
Got to travel to Alaska this year. We've got some clients up there. So that was a lot of fun.
That's cool.
So, yeah.
That, I mean, to me, and I want to talk about 2023 because we've, again, and I say this a lot around our, you know, our staff, but you better get used to change if you're going to be here because we change a lot and we've changed a lot in 7 years, but you know, Patton, from your perspective, and I want to talk about the corporate life cycles thing, and maybe this is the time to talk about it, but how do you feel like 2023 for us went? What changed? You know, if someone doesn't know who we are, what were we doing at the beginning of the year versus now?
Yeah. Oh, at the very beginning of the year, I think there was just all kinds of confusion. I think we had kind of split up how we were managing our field force and our managers, and we had 5 or 6 different people kind of as a team covering off on it. So we kind of got some more organization there. If I were to think about a theme, 2023 was a rough year and we worked really hard, the whole team did, to get to kind of a summit, just to kind of look at the potential we have in 2024 and the year on and realize, oh, that's a false summit. Like we've made so much progress, we're doing great, but this is just the start. By the end of the year, we have kind of a new plan for how we're going to scale the staff, how we're going to develop field managers, talking about a whole different set of activities that we've never really done before. If you worked at Turner Mining Group in December of 2022, and you stepped into 2023, you probably would not recognize us now. If you were on any of our conference calls, you'd have no idea what's going on. It's just kind of trying to take everything to a whole new level.
And we're recording this, like, what is today, the 9th?
Yeah,
January. So, like, it's early into the year.
Yeah. Yeah, I, you know, it's funny. I think when you look at how much we've changed and some of the people that have been here, you know, adding Tucker kind of out of nowhere, and Tucker's a guy we're going to get on one of these upcoming podcasts. Oh, yeah,
he'll be on soon.
But just adding him out of nowhere and not even really searching, you know, it's really kind of weird how we got connected and how he ended up here. And now I'm looking at him through two walls of glass. But if anyone were to ask me what's been the hardest thing to grow this organization from where we were in 2017 to where we are now in 2024, of course, obviously cash flow is difficult in a heavy asset business like mining or construction. But I think the most difficult piece of growth for us has been organizational development and an org chart.
Oh, yeah.
Like who reports to who? What are the KPIs? How do you hold people accountable to those things? Like organizational development and even bringing people up the org chart.
Yeah.
Or pushing people down the org chart.
And equipping them if we're bringing them up the org
chart. It is. I mean, for me, it's been an absolute nightmare. It's so cool to see now where we are. and cleaning up some of the org chart. But man, it's been,
it's timing too. I mean, it's one of the frustrating things is some of the stuff we're working on, we've talked about in the past, and there's probably people that have worked here before, you know, 2018, 2019. They're like, yeah, I recommended that. And, but it's got to kind of sync with the type of clients we have, the type of field managers we have, what our systems are. I mean, it's kind of this convergence of, hey, we're ready to manage this way. Like KPIs. In the past, what have KPIs been? Like we talk about them like, oh yeah, we're going to roll these things out, and we spend all this time in this big elaborate plan or bonus program or dashboard, and you know, the organization's not ready for it. And so it's just kind of a, it falls or it struggles. But now we're talking about not just leveling up our systems or our reporting, but also like really empowering our managers and bringing new, fresh blood into the industry. It's all kind of happening and working together.
Yeah. And it's, I always ask our employees, be patient. Like, you know, it's one of the things I texted Tucker over the weekend. Cause he's probably been here, what, 60 days, a couple months, yeah, 2 to 3
November
months.
As he started,
you know, be patient because, and I had this conversation with one of our young stud managers here a few weeks ago, right before Christmas. He was a little bit upset about something. And, you know, my comment to him, and it's been to the whole team multiple times, we're a 7-year-old company.
Yeah.
I'm a 34-year-old guy. I've never done this, and we're going to make a lot of mistakes. We've got a lot of young people. We've got some older people and more experienced folks, but guess what? They make mistakes.
Yep.
Yeah. And the org chart's going to change. Who you report to is going to change. And the people that come in here and can't be patient or are not comfortable with change, it normally doesn't work very well, long.
And I was, I'm trying to think of where I read this, but it was, it might've been in something, like a handbook, but people's ability. And I think Patton, you've demonstrated this tremendously well, to create value almost regardless of that change. Is yeah. really where I think we have seen kind of a dividing line. We have had people who have been all about the change but couldn't make the change themselves. We've had other people who haven't really been about the change and kind of have been, you know, suboptimally utilized. And then we have others who, like, whether they care about the change or not, they're just focused on finding a way to create value. And I think that third group of people is just something that people don't focus on enough. Like, a lot of things happen. I mean, shoot, within, and again, Turner's a 7-year-old company, but within it, COVID happened. So like a lot of change we can't even control, even if we want to. But we got to find ways to like figure out how we can contribute and we can help.
Yeah. You, Patton, you walked in this morning and we all kind of use this. We talk about this book around here called Corporate Life Cycles. Yeah. Who is the book by? Do you know? Or what's it called?
His last name is Izchek, Izchek.
Yeah. So it's on Amazon. I recommended it to another friend of ours who owns a company,
yep.
3,000 person company. And it's an amazing book. It's super dry. It's not a fun read.
Right.
But if you're like, you know, managing teams or trying to climb the corporate ladder and want to know how these organizations grow and die, because a lot of organizations, you know, reach what we call prime and then die. And there's some organizations in our industry that are doing that.
Yep.
You walked in though this morning and said something really interesting, because I haven't referenced this book in a while. I haven't reread it. I see it sitting on your table.
Yep.
Yeah. What did you say?
So some context here. We've been in a few different stages. You know, you're kind of running all over the place, got stuff to do.
Go is a stage,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there's multiple stages. That's kind of in the growth.
And that is where Turner Staffing Group currently is.
Yeah, you're chasing. Is that the first stage? Remind me.
No, there's infancy before that.
Yeah.
And we're out of infancy.
Okay.
Go, you're chasing every opportunity. You're saying yes to everything, trying it all, learning what you're good at. And then there's adolescence, where we have really been for 3 years.
Probably.
Where you kind of go from this young company to a company that is then trying to instill professional management. And if it takes, you get good org structure, you get reporting, you get like success and like all of your process. If it doesn't take, you get trying to put people in roles that doesn't work out, or you get a lot of frustration and infighting.
And you stay in adolescence.
And you stay in adolescence until you figure it out, or you die. Is kind of the
those are the two paths.
And so we have kind of been working through this for years, trying to see, you know, what's the magic combination, what's the good fit for these people in these roles. And this morning, I was kind of thinking about it, and I was like, you know, I'm going to go back and just read up and say, because I know we're there. It's a great reference. If you ever get stuck and you're just thinking about org development, go read this thing. It will tell you a lot about, like, it's spooky how well it can predict where you're at. But I was looking for some inspiration to, like, get us over this hump and say, you know, we know we need to get to prime. It's where, you know, it's kind of the target in the book, and it also kind of helps you understand how to get there. And so I was reading through, because they give you some, like, indications of where you're at. You know, are these conversations you're having, are you short on cash flow? Do you have infighting? Do you have, like, lack of clarity in org structure? And I noticed that for the first time, we don't sound like adolescents from what the book describes. And we have some early indications that we are moving more towards a prime organization where we're talking more about trying to find more, like, legit experienced manager type people, that we have enough confidence in some of what we set up and org structure and our systems, that if we can put some of the right folks in there to then kind of administrate them and run them, make decisions based on them, you know, this could take. So really, well, excited.
I mean, you guys must have a legit CEO that led you to that prime spot. I say that because it's hilarious when you read adolescent and prime. The only way, and I was shocked when you came in and said you feel like that's where we are, because I wouldn't have even thought that if you had asked me.
Yeah.
The only way we're doing that is because we've tried so many different things and they haven't worked.
Right.
And we've tried a project manager style A, B, C, D, E.
Yep.
We've tried an operations manager that manages five project managers. We've tried regional roles. You know, we've tried so many different things, and maybe some of those models weren't right for us at the time.
Yeah.
They might've been great models, but for us as an organization at the time, we weren't mature enough to execute. Some of those models just don't work for the type of clients and projects we do. But, you know, I kind of joke, because the only way we get there, and really it's the only way they highlight in the book that most people get there, is just through trying a lot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's why some of these companies that are 50, 60, 70-year-old companies, you know, they've tried a lot of different things through the, you know, through the stages of growth and decades of growth.
We're also doing it with a lot of our field managers. I want to give a quick shout out to everybody or anybody that has been in Montana this year.
Yeah.
Thomas, what you're talking about, people that can just roll with the punches and make positive change. I mean, that's a group of people that has done it, where they're not trying to cement themselves in current state and ask questions like, who do I report to? You know, how do I get my raise? What are my KPIs? They're showing up every day saying, like, what can I do to make the biggest impact?
Bingo.
And I think about Andrew and Woody, who have had four managers in the past 6 months, and getting phone calls from you and me and Cade and Tucker and Jared, and, you know, run down the list. And these guys are not trying to, you know, make things simple and easy for themselves. They're just saying, hey, we're a team. What do we need to do to make an impact? And that's also a big part of why I think we're moving from adolescence.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree more. There's always going to be some of that infighting. There's always going to be that one or two guys or gals that is a little bit cynical. They didn't get the job or the role. Yeah, and so they don't have the right title. But I would say, if you do it long enough and you try enough different models, the kind of the way we have, the cream rises to the top.
Yeah.
You know, as my dad would say.
Sure.
He's got a million one-liners. But eventually, the right people will figure out the right roles.
Yes.
And the people that are no longer here, you know, they may have had the opportunity to be in a right role. Mm-hmm. They opted out, whether voluntary or involuntary. But I think if you do this long enough, and we're starting to see this now, 6-7 years now is, you know, it's not a short amount of time, but it's not a super long time.
No.
You start to get people, though, in roles where it really works.
Yes.
And you're like, okay, let's do more of what's working and less of what's not working.
Yeah. There's just so much that's packed into this book. And I like, Patton, that you kind of said you can always just use it as a reference. I think that's a really important thing, is some of the things we talk about here, it's not just like a read it and put it down type of thing. Like, it's like a read it and then just kind of like keep it there, because you're not going to remember it all. And hey, oh, I think I remember something about that in here, and I'm going to like go back and look at it. It's part of the reason why it's part of our kind of like language that we use, is this is something we reference pretty regularly. The other thing I will call out just about this book in particular is prime does not necessarily mean perfect. Yeah. And I think, you know, when people say prime, and then Keaton says, well, you know, some people still are bad apples or things happen or whatever, like, that's important to call out. Like, we know that nothing we're building is perfect. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that still gets missed. But what prime really does represent is that the organization as a whole is performing, right? And it's at a performative stage, not a declining stage or
dysfunctional stage,
which you could call potentially like adolescence. Yeah. So, but yeah, I just wanted to call that out about the book.
Well, and I think it's a percent of the organization that's not performing.
Correct.
Right? At adolescent, it's a pretty large percentage.
Bingo.
You know, half the staff or a quarter of the staff aren't in the right spot. When you get to prime, you know, Apple or Amazon's a great example, right? They've got a ton of people that aren't fit for that organization.
Exactly.
But and they will be fired today.
A ton of people.
But they have a ton of people. Exactly. So as a percentage, it's a very small percentage. But we're into a new year. 2023 was fun. A lot of change. I know there's going to be more change in 24. And we say around here, you know, get 1% better every day.
Yep.
So I'm curious for you two, because you're the only two drinking an alcoholic beverage right now.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah, I know.
I'm getting 1% better today, so I'm better than you guys today. What are you doing as a New Year's? Like, do you guys do resolutions? Do you have a word for the year? What are you doing in 2024?
Oh, man.
Because I'm going to call him out.
I'm happy to go for it.
I'm going to call him out.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, man. I think this is kind of taking inventory of the personal life and look around and be like, man, there is just so much to do. I'm a guy that likes to, in my personal life, probably in professional as well, but I love to start projects, get these big ideas, get them going. Kind of the running joke for anybody that's around the office is, you know, bought a lake house as a renovation project, turned into a nightmare of a project. And I look at stuff like that and be like, man, I would be a happier, better person if I could just like get these things done and out of here and like put a bow on it. And like, I've already got my lessons learned at this point. I'm just letting them drag out.
What about the boat that had
the boat
holes where you don't want holes?
See,
specifically like in the engine block.
In the engine block. Yeah. See, stuff like that. I'm looking at all of the boats with bad engines in my yard type items and saying, yep, this is my year. I'm cleaning this up. So I think trying to get to kind of an optimized state in personal life. I have food in my fridge for the first time
in like
4 years. Wow. I go home, I cook dinners. It's, you know, crazy stuff. You can actually live this way.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's amazing.
So no resolution though. No word.
I don't do resolutions. I think it's just something to fail on.
Yeah. My focus is, you know, from a professional side, obviously Turner Staffing's in go-go phase. So that creates a set of things that need to happen for us to even get to adolescence.
Yep.
And a lot of that is around process. And note, you know, we just talked about process working correctly as a way to get to prime. You know, go-go phase, you don't even have any process. You're just saying yes to everything, as Patton said. So we need on the Turner Staffing side, we need to instill process. That's like the phrase that I have. And then on the personal side, I've been thinking a lot. Keaton and I have, you know, relatively youngish kids. And so I've just been thinking a lot about, you know, my kids and their current age and then how much longer they're at home. And so I have a
TE's half the amount of time.
I know he turns 9 this month. And so it's like, okay, well, I got 9 years left.
Yeah.
So
that's a wild revelation. I had the same one.
Yeah. So I'm thinking a lot about like me as a dad on the personal side. So like my word is like father, But yeah, it's good. It's cool. We all are so blessed, but yeah. It's to get to on the personal side, get to like have the word like Father be your word of the year. And then on the professional side, like, hey, we're going to instill like some process. Like those are great things to be working on for 24. Yeah.
No, I totally agree. I had two words for 2023 when the year started, and that was execute everywhere.
Yep.
You had it written on your whiteboard for a long time.
Somebody came in and erased it and put execute everyone at some point.
Uh-oh. Yeah. It wasn't me.
Yeah. I have a guess of who that was in this office. Yeah,
probably Jake.
Yep.
Remind me to fire him when this is over. So my word for 23 was execute everywhere. And we rolled out at the end of 2023 for our year-end staff meeting and Christmas party, our fourth core value, which I'll just go ahead and say it here. We'll probably do another podcast and talk more about it and in depth and why did we add a fourth value 7 years after we started and all these things. Yep. But the fourth value, so the first three are a heart for people, a mind for innovation, and an eye for safety. We keep it very simple. The fourth is an attitude for excellence.
Yep.
And so my words for 2024, excellence everywhere.
Yeah.
I think in 2023, we executed really well as an organization. You know, I personally finally quit putting off this program that Patton had done a long time ago. I think Schwanberg did this program.
I think he attempted it. I don't know if he's
if Schwanberg's listening, he's getting called out in public on a podcast. Wow, that's bold.
I could be wrong.
Ben's a lot bigger guy than you.
He'll text me.
Yeah, he's going to text you. Did this program where, you know, you got to work out twice a day, no alcohol for 75 days. Yep. It's a really cool, you got to read every day, drink a gallon of water. Really cool.
Yep.
So I did that, felt amazing. And actually just restarted that, a couple weeks before Christmas. My wife about killed me doing it through the holidays. Yep. But you know, in 2024, something fun, this book club idea, you know, starting a little book club with our staff and people sharing books. I think you shared the Energy Bus.
Yeah.
Which is an awesome book. You know, we had a guy on staff that has lost 120 pounds or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it gets me excited to see people not only killing it here at their jobs, but you're seeing, personal I think science. You're seeing people in their personal life get better.
Oh yeah. And the way I've kind of like coined it in my head is I'm starting to see seeds of excellence, which I think is really cool.
I love that. Yeah. I haven't heard that. I'm going to steal that though. And it's funny, you know, my wife and I am a classic, I'm a classic idiot, but I'm a classic guy that I come home and I'm still thinking about work.
Yeah.
I'm still checking emails and phone. And
you
all
are
things.
Wide open.
Open. That's exactly right. But she even said when I was, you know, doing this program where I was working out, waking up at 5 a.m., one of the workouts has to be outdoors.
Yep.
So this morning it was about 5:45. It was raining outside, you know, in the dark.
I took my parents to the airport this morning at 4. So
yeah, I was still in sleep at 4, but at 5. But she even said, like, you are a more present husband. You're a better dad. Like she could sense a difference. And so some of the guys that I've talked to here at the end of the year, just waking up, spending some time reading, like the little bitty things. And if you haven't read, like Energy Bus is a great one, especially for the beginning of the year.
Yes.
I'm going to start posting my book recommendations on Instagram.
Cool.
I think it's awesome. But, you know, reading 10 to 15 pages a day of like personal development, just the little things, even moving your body for 30 minutes a day.
Have you ever woken up early and read a book and regretted it?
No.
I don't think anybody ever has. It's a weird thing.
No. And I've never went to bed early and regretted it.
Yeah, never.
Exactly. You know,
yeah. So,
and you stay up like you don't sleep a ton as it is. So you tend to stay up like, I'm in bed well before Keaton is in bed most days.
And I would say, what I've learned through doing this program, now I'm on the second time, if you're staying up late and you're waking up pretty early, so you're not getting a ton of sleep, like if you're a 6 hour, 5 hour a night guy or gal, you're probably not optimal health.
Correct.
Because I was not optimal health. And when you work out twice in one day,
oh, yeah, you'll sleep
do that
better
for a long period. You want 8 hours. Yeah. Like, you know, so I don't know. I think just getting healthy, everyone uses the New Year's excuse to get healthy.
But you did it before the New Year.
Yeah, for me, pursuing excellence in our personal lives will translate into business.
Absolutely.
Business athlete is the term,
oh, yeah,
you know, that kind of sticks in my head. So for me, it's excellence everywhere. We're using it as a core value. We'll talk more about that in another podcast of why we did it. But just seeing other people, you know, in their personal lives strive for some excellence. In our staff meeting, I use the example of people putting the toilet paper on the toilet paper roll.
Yeah. Yep. Like, do it.
Do the small things well, and the big things become a lot
easier.
Take
the trash out, like when the trash can's
full. Not your job. Do it.
So what?
Yeah, do it. So
serve. How about having a heart for people? Somebody else, you know?
Yeah. So that's my people are just rolling their eyes at us. But that's my 2024.
No, I like that. I really like that. I think as you know, in Keaton, it's C12 that we do a lot of like personal reflection. And we like grade ourselves a lot. It's part of like, I like your excellence everywhere thing. The thing that I am the most conscious of trying to be excellent at is the father side, because there's just so many temptations to like go do something else.
Yeah.
And it's just like, but I do like that theme. And I think, you know, whether it's health from a physical perspective, health from a relational perspective, health from a spiritual perspective, like it is something that at least is getting talked about a lot more, but like we really, even as just individuals, like it's something everybody does need to focus on.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely agree. I've got a question, Patton, for you. So you're how old? 25?
25. Yeah.
You're a young guy. I think you're super blessed to share a room with Thomas and I.
Yeah, currently. I would agree. Yeah.
No, totally
I would
kidding.
Say, goodness gracious, at 25, if I had my life together like you do, that would be unbelievable.
He's got two houses and, you know, two vehicles, you know, two of everything. I would say, I would actually go out on a limb and say that most people listening to this that, you know, kind of know you a little bit from afar. If there are employees, they've seen you on some of our stuff before.
Yeah.
They're probably wondering, well, how in the world is this guy, like this guy must just be a buddy of Keaton's, or like he must have some dirt on Thomas. Like, how does he get, to do this?
He's definitely got dirt on me. So
he's got dirt on the whole staff, literally the whole staff. But you know, I think you're in a role where no one gets to see all the crap you have to deal with. So they think it's a lot more glamorous than it is. But, you know, for being a 25-year-old kid and, you know, quite frankly, I would not have you in this position if you weren't legit. I think everyone knows that. Oh, like, we don't keep people around that aren't legit.
Yeah.
Anyone here that leaves here is a rock star somewhere else. So it's not like, you know, you're a golden boy and we're doing you some big favor. How do you think about your proximity to other people that are legit and where you came from? Because I wish we could show a picture. Like, when I found you, I brought you from the streets.
Hey, you know what? You know what? We should, Sarah, maybe when she, like, clips this, puts a photo, like, on the story.
Yeah, there's some good ones.
It'd be great because you know, with a bent up, you know, camo hat that had been run through the mud with the fish hook, you know, and to now look at you and, you know, you're a respectable professional young man that has the respect of all of his peers.
He's got a jacket on.
And some of these people around here are super legit and actually all listen to what you say.
No, they're all super legit. I'd have to agree with that.
So how does this happen?
You know, it, perfect timing. I was actually asking myself this same question this morning. A constant thing, I'm sure anybody listening has heard, like the imposter syndrome. If you kind of lose it or stop asking yourself the question, you're probably doing something wrong. If you start to be like, I'm legit, I'm the guy, of course I'm here. Like, why would I not be? you've probably taken a wrong turn somewhere. But for me, by continually asking myself that question, the harder one following is, how do I stay here? Like, how do I keep adding value? Like, that's this morning, you know, thinking, where are we at and why are we here and how do we get where we're going, and trying to be the voice that's not just going to always talk about, like, what's today, but, you know, what's next. A lot of the discussions I feel like we have very little to do with what's going on today. Most of it doesn't even matter. I think realizing that it's all going to pass anyway. If we can focus on the next thing, that's what's important to me. I think that's probably a large part of why I'm in the role I'm in. But yeah, it is a good question. I probably don't have the best answer for it. That's what I'm asking myself.
I'm curious. So two things on this. I do think there is something buried in what you just said, which is this kind of constant pursuit.
Yeah.
Right? Like, not always focusing on the here and now and constantly pursuing something. I think that's something that Patton demonstrates in spades. I think the other one is, if I were to be asked this question, is just always showing up. Yeah. I mean, always. I have not, and I've known Patton now for 5.5 years, I have not seen a scenario that he didn't show up. And we've seen a lot of scenarios over 5.5 years. And so I think there is a doggedness to you that where you just
got that dog in
you. Yeah, he just won't let.
I've got a story for this one,
right? And yeah. I think, you know, there is a lot to be said for that over long periods of time, right? It's not just a sprint, like it is continual performance in that
Keaton,
way.
Keaton used to tell me, and still do, it's about packing in those hard conversations, and if you can get those reps in, they're going to make you better.
Yeah.
When you talk about showing up, a couple of very specific examples come to mind. One actually being with Cade this past fall. One of the things that I definitely try to do is make those phone calls you don't want to make, or send the messages you don't want to make, or be the person to say the thing that nobody else wants to say in the meeting. Those are the worst ones, but by the time they're over, you know, I think both people, if you can be respectable, respectful in the discussion, it's helpful.
Yep.
We had a disagreement about a staffing plan on a project, and you know, it was Cade's responsibility, and at the time, maybe I was sticking my nose somewhere it shouldn't have been. Maybe it was somewhere it should have been, you know, debatable. But, you know, he was very upset and got a hold of me, and I missed a call. And when you look down at your phone and you've got a couple text messages that somebody's upset with you and you've got the missed call, you've got to make the choice to click that button and get on there and talk to them. Because that's the only way it's going to get better. Same thing in personal life, but making those hard choices, I think, has really been a big leap for me in the past couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree.
That's good.
You've lived through some difficult people. And at one time, I don't know, it was probably a year ago, maybe a little longer, you and I were having a one-on-one, and I called you Chief Half Staff.
Yeah.
You know, and the comment was not because you were, like, you know, half of a person or half of a manager. It was like you were dealing with half of the staff, and you were leaving the other half of the staff away because you didn't want to have to deal with
easier.
The hard stuff. It was easier.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Those were hard conversations. I was with one of our director level people last night, doing our performance review for 2023. And the comment came up, and you just said this a second ago. I think the fear among people around here is the organization outgrows them, or the organization grows faster than they can grow themselves. And it was one of the questions that came up, and I would be lying if I said I don't have the same fear, right? What happens if this organization outgrows my talents and capabilities?
Sure.
And my experience and my ability to lead a big team. I mean, I think with the staffing folks and our folks, I mean, we're 500 employees-ish, you know, give or take. And so a lot bigger than what I think we expected it would be at this stage, or at least what I expected. And so, you know, that to me is where this fourth value in having an attitude for excellence personally, professionally, like if you care enough about your job and your path and your career, you're going to go apply some of that to your personal life. Yep. Like you're going to read the books. Sure. You're going to go do the hard things. It's really easy to do the hard things at work when you do the hard things outside of work.
Yep.
You know, and it's really hard to do, you know, it's really hard to get stuck making easy decisions and watching Netflix and sitting on the couch and then coming into work and getting upset deep down, but not saying anything because you don't want to have, you know, conflict. That doesn't improve you. I can promise you that person will get outrun by the organization.
Yeah. Sure.
And so that's to me where this excellence theme, I think, is going to make a ton of sense for folks in 2024.
I think it is. And my caution would be to anyone, just because an organization changes or something happens where you may not be in the right seat, that doesn't mean you can't bring value. And that's why I like Patton's doggedness, because it's not, we've jacked Patton all around this organization. And yet he's still showing up, still providing value. That to me, and I mean, Patton and I have had a lot of conversations about that over the years. And it's just that pursuit, I think, is where you individually forget your title, forget your seat on the bus. Like, you can create value where there will be a seat. I don't know what it is. I don't even know if it's with the organization you're in right now, but there will be a seat, because if you are providing value, any company would kill to have you.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, and I think people get a little too wrapped around the axle of like, oh, I have to do this next, then this next, then this next. There's no defined path. Yeah. I've never seen one.
I think one of the things also that, you probably don't take it for granted because you're not really that type of person, but it's easy to forget. And that's proximity to other legit people.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
You know, I think if we plucked you out of here 7 years ago and stuck you in a Waffle House or in another, I don't want to say another construction company, like we're the best. But if we stuck you somewhere else.
Yeah. He'd be different.
You'd be a different person.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's pretty well everybody on the entire team. At some point, I'm calling for advice or feedback or, hey, what's your perspective on this issue? There's several folks that I did have some reflection and feel like maybe I am taking that for granted. Like, try to go make a little bit more intentional push to have one-on-one time with them or ask them those questions. But, it's if you've got this team of people that are kind of on the same pursuit as you, that are super legit, have had these careers, done impressive things, why would you not like ask them questions or learn from them? Anybody for that matter. But like, yeah, we've got a very unique group of really intelligent people. Whatever they're thinking, that they might be quiet or saying nothing in the meeting or saying something you completely disagree with. If you can take the time afterwards to go unpack that and be like, hey, what's going on? Tell me. There was a phrase he used on a call a week or two ago, said like, what are you feeling? Like, what, whenever you said that on the call, what are the emotions behind that are making you say or do the thing you're doing? And we got to, I was like, holy cow. Okay. Well, why didn't you say that in the meeting? Like, it's, taking into account the perspectives, experience, the just legitness of a lot of our folks. It has helped so much.
There's a Stegen tool. Reference something else we've done called the ladder of inference.
Oh, yeah.
Remember this?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So, Patton, when you're talking about people like not necessarily understanding where someone else is or not taking the time to ask the question of where someone else is, you make an inference.
Yeah.
You make it based on your own where you are, not necessarily where that other person is. And so it's just a really, there are these interesting tools and frameworks that you see show up time after time after time. And being able to first be aware enough to recognize it. And then second, like say, no, I need to ask. Because right now I'm making an inference. I'm not asking. And it's like even just taking that 1 second to ask that question can be so powerful in changing a dynamic or a decision or whatever.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. And it's so critical. You know, you mentioned being around legit people. I think makes us all a little more legit, kind of pushes the envelope, if you will. you know, you see Travis Pastrana and some of these guys that have done these tricks, like every trick they've done is like first ever in the history of humankind to do it. Well, it's because they're all one-upping each other, yep. mm-hmm. and they're all getting better together. And I think that a lot of that happens here. But the same is true when you put the wrong person in.
Yeah.
And we've seen that where they're not making folks better. They're actually dragging people down with their deliverables or
they're capping them in some way.
Yeah. And it's so critical. And I think we're realizing this, we've probably realized this in the last year plus, but now deploying this more than ever, the people we hire to lead inside this organization is the most critical thing we will do.
Yep.
More critical than banking relations or which equipment we buy. Like the people that are leading our teams, whether that's in accounting and finance, whether that's in a project site in Montana or Texas or where, like the people that are leading other people, that is a critical role.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say we've done that wrong, but we've not done that justice.
Well, where we've struggled, and I imagine a lot of people have struggled, is taking somebody who's a good leader of people, who understands, is going to answer the phone calls, is going to want to solve it and want to know who they're talking to on the other side of the phone, isn't always the same person that knows how to solve the problem. And it's like finding somebody that can do both, that has been tough. We've at times had one or the other. Yeah. I think we're going in the right direction now.
Yeah. Builders or doers. And it's easy to get builders. And how many people have seen the foreman be an amazing foreman? He gets promoted to something that he's not used to doing.
Yep.
You know, he's great managing 5 guys. Can he manage 50 guys?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
next level issue.
It's a big leap.
Yeah.
And then what are you doing to equip him to be successful?
Yeah. What have you trained him?
Exactly.
Have you given him any resources? You know, and so it is a real challenge. But to me, I think proximity to other people that share the same grit and grind and they want to continue to grow as the organization grows, I think it's so critical.
Yeah.
So I want to ask what you guys are excited about for 2024, because we're sitting here early January. We're going to do more of these podcasts. We've already established
Excited about that. I can say that I'm excited about that. I think also not just quantity. I'll say us are probably going to push a little deeper in all of these combos. Like I'm actually reflecting in the moment on the conversation we're currently having, and we've pushed further on topics than we have in the past.
I still want to execute the radio show idea where we have, employees call in live, unfiltered, try to catch one of us off guard.
Yeah, it could be
fun. With a hot take.
Yeah, no, it'll be fun. Yeah, we got to figure out the logistics on that, but yes.
Yeah.
I like the idea of it.
What are you excited about in 24? Because you get a front seat look to all this that other people don't.
I'm going to pick an odd one. There's tons and tons to pick from, but one of the ones we've been talking about for the past couple weeks that I'm like just jacked about. And everybody I'm talking to, I'm telling them about this. And it is this mission we're on to bring in legit people from outside the industry as some of our leaders. This is something that, in the industry, we're always kind of locked in, and everybody always talks about, project managers and superintendents and foremen and operators. And, they all are kind of just, that's the pool of talent the industry has. And we have been talking a lot about, well, you know what? What does a project manager do? A lot of what we're trying to design, it's not specific to somebody that can go hop in a dozer and run a dozer or, lay pipe and fuse pipe, but it's running it like a business. And we're like, how can we go and find some fresh talent and kind of level up and think differently? So I'm really pumped to see where we go in 2024, bringing in some high power, like high level thinkers to challenge and grow our leaders. Because not only are they going to come in and, run a P&L or help us design budgets, but if we get people that are succeeding outside the industry and bring them into the industry, we start to transform our people. We start to look different on our projects, and we get some of our, foremen, superintendents, our staff leveling up in kind of ways that we otherwise wouldn't, because, we're kind of just focused on ourselves. And that's going to bleed out through the industry. If we start running MindSites better or thinking about problems differently by kind of bringing in talent that's not just specific to what we know or who we are or the industry. I think that's a differentiator. I think that kind of moves the entire industry forward.
Yeah. Yeah. We kind of had this revelation in late in 2023, Jeff and Aaron, a couple guys that,
awesome guys,
you know, they've got a few thousand employees, and we went and had dinner and, they hung out for a while, and you and Aaron kind of stepped away, and it blew my mind when, you know, they've got 50 some odd locations. Yeah. Not super old company. They've scaled tremendously well, and some of our questions were on how they've been able to scale so well. They got the same problems everybody else does. But when Aaron said, yeah, we specifically hire our leaders, our director-level folks from outside the caregiving industry, their caregiving company, and they don't hire people with experience at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
They hire people that have been accountants and people that have got law backgrounds and
great conversation because I'm talking to him about like, this is, we're talking about it for the purpose of scaling. And when we add projects, like how do we continue to get these talented people that are gonna help us grow? And he told me, he's like, well, yeah, we hire everybody from outside our industry. I'm like, yeah, well, you can't do that in mining. Like, you know, they got to know. And he's like, why? And I'm like, well, you know, because how are they going to solve the problem? He's like, well, doesn't this guy do that? Doesn't the superintendent run the site? And, you know, like, what are you actually asking this guy to do? And I kind of looked at him like, well, like we talked about earlier, if you don't have the information or the facts, like you're kind of disarmed right there. And he asked me, I'm like, well, you know, I guess there's actually not a reason why. And took us down this whole path of, well, why are we talking about mining talent when we should just be talking about talent?
Yep.
And I'm like, thinkers and doers.
Yeah, I think we've got to figure out the cynicism thing. It's my big worry. You know, you get legit dozer operators, production folks, you know, even legit foremen and superintendents who know the industry well, super experienced, have been around, done it all, seen it all. And then you throw someone different in the mix.
Yeah.
You know, if they're not legit and they don't go get buy-in the right way, cynicism can run wild, and there can be a revolt at the site. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people don't buy into the vision of what this guy or gal wants to build. And so there's a lot of little details to go make this thing work and be perfect. But it's going to be super fun to watch.
Yeah, it is. And it's also, I think, to get the messaging right in this, we're not trying to say, we don't need to be miners to work in the mining industry. We're trying to be a melting pot of, like, really intelligent, high-powered folks that, if anything, we need our high-power operators and foremen and superintendents even more now to get people from outside the mining industry to think like this and understand this space. And, you know, we talk about dragging attention to this industry. We better be doing it with talent.
Yeah.
Absolutely, we better be doing it with talent. I think you're right to call out cynicism, Keaton. But I will quote your dad, the cream rises to the top. And yeah. I think anybody who is cynical, okay, you can be cynical until then you better be willing to get in the seat and do that job, right? And if you can't perform at the level that someone else can perform, we also always say best players play, right? And so I think, yes, we should be cautious about it, and we need to be thoughtful in anything we do in our organization. We care about our people first and foremost. And we will be, but I think cynicism is kind of a disguised way of like saying like potentially jealous. And so it's like, well, okay, if you're jealous, like go show it and do it. And you're going to get here. You're always going to get the chance because that's what, I mean, we're growing and we always need more talent. And so I think,
there's nothing that makes me more excited than to see a dozer operator who wants to go be this person we're talking
about,
director level person. No,
and by the way, we have stories in our organization of people that have continued to level up. So I think it's not what I want to caution is just like when people are listening to this and they hear your cynicism comment, you know, it is real, and we need to acknowledge that we need to be careful about doing things thoughtfully and respectfully and, you know, integrated in a cohesive way. But, you know, we also aren't really going to tolerate like someone just being a bad apple.
No, so, but it's also true to our values. It's the same kind of value we talked about with me being in proximity to, you know, all the leaders in my life. If we can pair some of our foremen and superintendents with some like just super legit business people, that they can then learn from and understand how to go do analysis and like think differently. I mean, why, if you could build a team and there are no rules because, you know, we can just make whatever rules we want, why would you not go find the highest talent that can run a $1 million business or $100 million business to go run a mine site like a business? Yeah. I mean, it's, yes, you still need the expertise. The on-site team is incredibly important. And if anything, funneling the information, the ideas to this type of person. But, you know, that's kind of the idea that we are now kind of melting the two minds and kind of using each other to level each other up.
Yep.
Yeah. I got to call out a huge section of the industry, though, because so often, and this happened here recently with a guy, somebody on our team who, you know, these people want to jump into this role, right? You hear we're posting a role, and the first question, if I'm a dozer guy or I'm a foreman and I see that Turner has posted a role that's going to be my boss's boss or my boss's boss's boss, my question is, okay, how do I get to that role someday? Or how do I get considered for that role? And, you know, the problem I have with some of these folks, you know, if you own a $60,000 diesel truck and you want to make it faster, more powerful, you go spend money on it, right? You put a bigger turbo on it, spend $3,000. Mm-hmm. Bigger wheels and tires, spend $5,000.
Yeah,
you do. A lot of people do that, right? Why aren't they thinking about making themselves bigger, faster, stronger, more powerful? Why don't you take the $3,000 and invest it in yourself? What are you doing after work to make yourself better?
For sure. And just so that our employees hear this, because I think this is also important. I mean, if someone came to us and said, hey, and some people have, so like, I don't want to act like this doesn't happen because I think it does, where they say, I want to get better and here's like the things I want to get better at, we dump resources at them. Part of the reason why you're starting the book club is so that people see ways to, you know, that we have been equipped, both Keaton, myself, and Patton, and if they want to, if they feel like that this could help them, that here is a resource to go do it.
Yeah.
So,
my issue is with, and entitlement's too strong of a word, especially for our generation. I think it's overused, but I do think there are people that, you know, they say, well, I've been at the company for 3 years or 5 years. Right. I deserve a shot at this role.
Right.
Well, the best players play.
Yeah.
And you're either going to be one of the best and you're going to do the things that make you one of the best, or you're not. It's not up to me. It's not up to any of us. If you're not spending time after your job trying to get better to go get the next job, like, you're getting passed up by somebody who is.
Well, and you've said this before on podcasts, and I don't remember who exactly it was with, but you made the comment about, you know, there's this kind of pursuit of yourself kind of advancing, but also a patience that goes alongside of it. And really, you know, you should always be trying to obviously do your own job as best as it can be done, but really also starting to do the job ahead of you in order to be kind of recognized as capable of doing that job and such that you would then get that opportunity. But if all you're doing is just clocking in, doing your stuff to an adequate level and clocking out, I don't really care how long you do that. It's that is not a path of advancement.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you were to poll the people that we're talking about bringing from outside the industry into some of these roles and you were to ask them, you know, what are things that you listen to in your free time? What are books that you read in your free time? Who are the people you hang out with in your free time? Where do you go spend your energy in your free time?
Yeah.
Very few of them are saying, I'm at the bar Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Oh my gosh.
Now, no. They don't have anything against a bar. But no. If they're spending a huge chunk of their time, very few of them are saying, yeah, I'm spending my money putting new turbo on my truck. Nothing against the turbo. I love turbos. I love big trucks. My point is, it's going to be a difficult conversation for so many folks that think they want to continue to level up in their career, and they see a posting from their company for the next position, and you've done nothing in your free time to deserve it or earn it.
Yeah.
You've done nothing to make yourself better. You've not read the books. You've not put in the time. Mm-hmm. You've not, you know, networked with the right people. You know, I would love nothing more than to see miners in the mining industry continue to level up and take these roles. I think the next CEO should be within our company somewhere in the dirt today.
Absolutely. Well,
on this role you're talking about that's getting posted, I think we have people in the company today that will be in this role. I also think that we have people in this role that, whether or not they're hired for this opening the first time, they will be better by watching the person in this role and taking these lessons and seeing, you know, the lessons that he's going to go provide or learn with. Like, they're going to bring material, new ways of thinking. Like, you're going to become a more dynamic person and better at your job by having the right leader too.
I'm going to call Pat now since he's sitting right here. I was going to wait and do it in a couple podcasts from now, but since he's sitting right here, and I hope this lands well, because this could land really poorly, and I look back and not like this.
White claw.
Do you remember what I told you when you found out? You looked at my calendar and you said, hey, I thought you had a call with somebody. Who was that? And I said, oh, it's this guy named Tucker.
Yep.
Do you remember what you said?
I probably something cynical, if I had to guess. But
I remember exactly what you said.
What I say?
Why in the world are we considering hiring a guy like this?
Yep.
Because his resume was probably attached to the calendar invite or the call invite or whatever. And I said, well, I don't really know. I don't have a job description for him, have no title. But super interesting guy, super interesting background, sounds smart on the phone. Let's see what he's about. Knowing what you know now, 60 days later, and now he's sitting right here, like, what would you say to that? Because I'm going somewhere with this. Yeah. Like, looking back at that conversation you and I had, it was probably a little bit heated and friction, because you're the type of guy, you're like, we need a job description. We need a salary range. We need to post this. We need to evaluate all of our options.
Yeah.
What do you say to that now?
Oh, man. I look back. When I made the comment, it's under the context of going into 2024, hey, we're going to get real org chart. We're going to get real job descriptions, salary bands. Like, whenever we go to hire somebody, we're going to know what they do, know how to train them. Like, we're laying all this foundation, including on our staff management team. And so we look at this and like, well, you've got a guy. We don't have an open role. You're telling me, hey, he's cool. We should talk to him. And I don't even like, dude, for what? Like, what are you talking about? Like, have you gone insane? Like,
yes.
It was an interesting and you know, probably be the same in the next one.
But yes,
I was kind of taken back of like, man, like, what, this seems like a massive distraction. This seems like something that's way off base for what we're trying to build.
Timing wasn't good. Timing, end of the year. No. We're trying to hire a CFO. Yeah,
we're trying to get all these other pieces in place. We're already trying to like clean up our org chart for operations management. Like, we do not need to throw one more piece into this puzzle. And he has been here now for, what'd we say, like 90 days,
something like that.
And he has made a tremendous impact, and it is watching and learning. And like, he has challenged a lot of like, we'll say, well, you know, he's asking, hey, how do you guys do this? And he'll say, hey, you know, do this, do that. And he's like, well, why? Like, well, it's obvious, isn't it? I mean, then he's like, well, no, you guys are thinking about this all wrong. And it's using data, using, you know, cash flow models to be like, hey, I know that this is how you, how much you think this costs. This is actually how much this costs.
And yeah.
Holy cow. Like, we're leveling up.
Well, this is going to happen. I think the point to even asking that is, this is going to happen with people when you throw something new into a project. You're going to get foreman and super saying, why this guy? Why now? The project's got enough problems and challenges. And, you know, maybe we got lucky with Tucker. I would say we did. But there's also going to be pushback. In the same way you thought, man, this is like, okay, maybe it's an interesting resume, but like, is this really what we're going to do?
Yeah.
This is gonna happen at the project level when you bring someone in who's like, hey, I'm an accountant and I'm here to be your boss.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Now, I think, again, we need to do the right kind of onboarding and integrating.
Yeah.
So that we're hopefully, it, you know, I think us just throwing people to the wolves is not exactly wise either. And so it's on us as leaders in the organization, the three of us, to make sure we're providing the right information, providing the right foundation for them to jump from.
You so got to go get buy-in.
Yeah, you just have to.
You got to get context and buy-in.
And we should, and it's why I bring it up, is like, if you are trying to level up your organization in any way, I don't care if the person's an industry insider or an industry outsider, you bring anyone new in, you better give some good context around it, because otherwise your organization, how could they know? And then are you really just going to throw this person to the wolves? Because that's quite unfair of that to ask.
Tucker's leaving. I don't know if he heard us, and now he's never going to talk to Patton again. End of the workday.
Well, the bringing somebody in that's not from our business, Tucker, and he's asking all these questions about, well, why do you do it this way? And he's challenging our thinking. And you've got to kind of try and eat that piece of humble pie to realize that maybe what we've been doing is not perfect. Shocker.
How many people, though, thought, like, especially when he came in here, because he looks professional. He's legit. He sounds professional.
Yep.
How many people, when he came in here, do you think, like, got a little defensive and like kind of
stood up
straight and like, well, who's this guy? Like,
what's and then try to show how great and powerful they are. Yeah, of course. Every one of us, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I think the same thing will happen if we start bringing in people. He's outside of our company. We start bringing in people from outside of our industry that really start poking holes in some of the assumptions we just make for what's best. You know, whenever I'm waiting for the day, the phone call we're going to get when he says, well, why do you need two dozers? You know, here's a calculation I did that says you need one. It's going to be an explosion, but it's lessons learned, a challenge. Like, okay, just because we've been doing something, or even an entire industry has been doing something some way, doesn't mean it can't be challenged or better.
It's been a really interesting couple months. I was talking to Tucker this morning, and he was running a model, and he was like, yeah, we're going to run one D10 and two D8s. And I was like, why in the world would you ever do that? That sounds like the dumbest thing. Because I knew the operation. I was like, that you need three D10s.
Yeah.
And it's been a real kind of eye-opener for me to get out of my founder syndrome mental trap that I live in, that I don't know at all.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be similar for people that are prideful of their heritage in the industry and their 15 years of service, to talk to someone who challenges their way of thinking.
Yeah.
When Tucker says something that I don't agree with, you know, in my mind, I'm like, dang, he's probably going to show me a spreadsheet now and show me why he's right. And why whatever I had in my mind has been wrong the last 5 years.
Yep. It reminds me of,
it's wild,
like the presidential election. And we talk about this, I'm sure, all across the country, is whoever this role is, like, why are we limiting ourselves to, you know, 5 to 10 names, when in all reality, we should pick the best and brightest person in the country to lead us, like, no matter who that is across the aisle.
Don't we have, like, that?
Well, but maybe. It depends on your ass. Maybe we do.
He dodged that really well.
Yeah, he did a great job.
Very good.
Very professional.
But regardless of what you believe, I think we can all agree we should all be nominating the best and brightest. And why?
Yeah.
Don't we want to do the same thing in whatever we're trying to build in the mining industry?
Absolutely.
Best and brightest, no matter where you're from.
It is across the board, right? And and you see the organizations that do this, right? From the United States military, who does a really good job of honoring service, but promotes totally on merit, right?
Yeah.
And the cream rises to the top. Or you see this in really high functioning companies that are worth, you know, trillions of dollars in market capitalization. There's a reason why they get that, right? They are very meritocratic. They have that just built into the way they make decisions, promote, reward, all of those things. And I think, you know, what excites me about all of that language is that sounds like prime talk, right? To bring it back to kind of the phase of a firm, that is something functioning at a high level. That is not shooting from the hip. That is not, well, I've been doing this. That is not it, all of those statements that aren't based on actually analyzing it and then picking the best path forward. Yeah, it's just...
I want to pitch the All In Pod.
Yes,
because
for sure
there was something said. It's been a few episodes ago. The All In Podcast is amazing. If you're kind of a nerd, business nerd like we are, probably boring for a lot of folks. But Chamath, I think, is the one that said it. So there's one far right conservative, Sachs.
Yeah.
There's one far left liberal. And then there's two that are kind of, for the most part, in the middle. Chamath and David
are in the middle.
Yeah, and so Freeberg. But they, even Chamath said this about Trump, that Trump, they believe now, and all of them except for Sachs, was so against Trump originally, even when he was president, that they now are looking back at some of the things he did. And
suggested, or even might not have happened.
And they say, if you can take the person that is Trump and set it over on a shelf, and you look at the results and the actions and what actually happened for the country and the policy, Trump's been one of the best presidents of all of our presidents. Not to get political.
Yeah.
The results. And these are coming from guys that are not Trump people.
Correct.
These are billionaire businessmen.
And my level up to the All In Pod would be, and can't we also like get someone who can drive policy and like do some from a like a,
yo, absolutely.
Like I mean, rally behind or whatever you want to call
yes,
it.
Yes.
And that's my push.
The point is though, people are not going to vote for Trump. It's the same thing in the dirt world, right?
Absolutely.
People are not going to accept the accountant running a mining project for us.
Yep.
In the same way, regardless of the results,
yes,
it's going to take some real buy-in to get people to rally around that guy.
Mm-hmm.
The same way it's going to take real buy-in for people to look at results.
Correct.
Because you're looking at... You know, the things, if a guy shows up, and we've seen this, this is funny that we went on a project walk here recently, and one of the executives for the client, he had on boots that were like four sizes too big. They weren't even like mining, they weren't work boots, right? You could tell he's never been on a mine site. And the first thing people do is assume the guy is a total idiot.
Yep.
They're like, this guy, he doesn't know anything. Now, in fact, he is super smart. He saves the company millions of dollars a year, but everyone just discredits him and does not look at the results. I think it's our challenge. I'm just kind of calling out our challenge.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. And again, to highlight the All In Podcast, like I think you have people on there that try as best they can to set kind of like personal bias off to the side and actually have a conversation about policy and results and facts, which is really
setting personal bias off to the side is going to be one of the hardest things, especially for our generation.
Oh, I know.
Who have already like predetermined who they're liking and not liking in life.
Exactly. And I think it's, and to bring it, whether it's to the president or to these leaders that we will bring in to Turner, right? I think whoever that leader is needs to deliver, right, on all the things we talked about and needs to find their way to relate. Because whoever that individual was, who I don't even know who it was, I have a guess, but I don't know who it was. If they did an effective job of relating in the first interaction with these individuals, well, they might look past the boots being four sizes too big the next time that individual shows up.
Yeah.
And so it's, I think from a leader perspective and like what we're asking of people it is to deliver all of those results and have an attitude for excellence. And it's to make sure that not only you like live having a heart for people, but that you're relating in such a way that they feel like you are having a heart for them. And that's where it's like, whether, again, whether it's president or whoever, like any true good leader, like that's what we would want and aspire to.
It's a little bit of humility. I think if Trump had a little humility, he'd win the other half, you know. Now, maybe not all of them, but some of them. Yeah. I think if these managers that are going to come in as outsiders have some real humility, they should win people over with their legitimacy. You know, if they're not humble, we have a real, you know, we got a real problem.
You know what's funny? So there's so many things that are intersecting. So I just sent
this podcast is going to get blocked because it's how many times we've said Trump.
And we're getting canceled.
I am not endorsing Trump.
So, and I think we've done a good job of like balancing all of that.
Podcast people are listening.
Yep. Anyways, you talked about having humility, being humble. There is a framework that I just sent around to our recruiting team that is a way of evaluating individuals as part of an interview on these three metrics. It's called Humble, Hungry, Smart. And this concept was written in a book, and I forget the book, otherwise I would give it credit, so apologies. But the concept is you're looking for individuals who demonstrate humility, demonstrate a hunger or a pursuit of excellence or an attitude for excellence, and then also some capability, some intelligence, right? And so I think when we think about these leaders, right, we talk about it in our four core values, and we use that language here on this podcast. But I think for other people who have different core values, I like talking about tools that they could use that they don't have to adopt Turner's four core values. You know, a concept of thinking of humble, hungry, and smart is a way to really kind of address this, you know, what we should be aspiring to as leaders.
Yeah, I love that. I've never heard that, but that's, I think that would have prevented us from a lot of heartache in the early years.
Well, again, you got to learn it. Like,
how do you evaluate humbleness in some of our
when
early...
you don't know? It's difficult.
Okay, well, this has been fun. It's the first pod of 2024. I imagine this is going to be the first one that she releases.
I think so.
You know, I think for me to have both of you guys, I don't think there's been two more instrumental people to get us where we are than you two. So it's fun to start the year off with you two on here. I'm super excited to see where some of these other legit people that come into the organization in 2024, what they change us to look like. Yeah. Because I think the concept we're talking about, bringing outsiders in, getting buy-in, I mean, that is the challenge of our industry. You know, you don't win the people game. And I've said this from day one. If we win the people game, we win the whole thing.
Yeah. Yep.
Because so many companies out there are not winning the people game. But what we're talking about in this tactic of bringing smart, intelligent people that are humble into the dirt world, that's a real challenge.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's, you know, over the next 5 to 10 years, you know, if we can be the conduit for a change like that, to be look at Turner Mining Group and say, hey, these people are bringing in the best and brightest into their company and the industry, it's going to have to happen with the timing. You know, over time, there will be people from outside the industry come in. I mean, why not start it with leadership?
Yeah.
Well, we're an hour and a half in. That means we've gotten two resumes or applicants. Yeah. can't wait to go read them. but I appreciate you guys for listening. We're going to do this more frequently. I got people holding me accountable to make sure we do this more frequently. We don't have any sponsors. If you
maybe Jared.
we could get Jared and Bloomington Brewing to sponsor. Although you've already pitched him for free.
I know, but maybe he'll send more beer.
Okay. Well, we'll take more beer if you're listening. Appreciate you joining. We have a fun time doing this. This is for all of our employees. If you're not an employee and you got some value out of it, we appreciate it. I'm going to keep ending this. Yes. See if I can remember. It's been a long time. If you've enjoyed the podcast, like, share, subscribe, send it to someone you love. If you hated it, send it to someone you hate. Thanks.
This is Turner Mining Live. This is Turner Mining Live. This is Turner Mining Live. Live.